How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. It is here. We are here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, the American Forces Network, Cable Radio Network, iHeart Radio, iTunes, TuneIn Radio. The list goes on and on. The most listened to daily pro wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the world. Recovering today from a taping last night of our annual Christmas show. A lot of drinking was done. I feel like one of those old radio announcers who's had a lot of bourbon, and so their voice is all screwed up. That's where I am today, but hey, we are ready to go. We have a full sober show for you this afternoon. Got a lot of news. In fact, so much news that there's no way we're going to get into all of it, but hey, we'll be back later on this weekend with more. We have two guests coming up. Tonight, obviously, is the Ring of Honor pay-per-view, Final Battle, their version of WrestleMania. We've had a Ring of Honor guests on the show all week. Monday, Ray Rowe. Tuesday, Michael Elgin. Wednesday, Jay Lethal. Yesterday, Jay Briscoe. Today, we wrap it up with Adam Cole, who will be facing Kyle O'Reilly on the show coming up here tonight. That'll be taking place in about a half hour. And in about 20 minutes, we're going to be joined by the Doctor of Lucha himself, Steve Sims. He's going to be on the show today. We'll be talking the death of Liz Mark. I also want to talk to him about a match that took place a couple of days ago, kind of somewhere here in the notes, but there was an outdoor show and a dog ran in. A dog ran into the match unannounced and the wrestlers sold for the dog. I need to hear more about this story. I'm going to talk to Dr. Luch about that. Mike Sempervive will be joining us as always. It is a packed weekend. Besides Ring of Honor, we've got the UFC on Fox show tomorrow night. Cowboy Donald Cerrone versus Rafael Dos Anjos. Dos Anjos, whatever you pronounce it. And a lot of stuff, so stick around, everybody. We're going to kick it off after the break. Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Back here on Wrestling Observer Live, Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are once again joined by Mike Sempervive, also of WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of news to get into here today, and Steve Sims will be joining us, Adam Cole will be joining us. Thank God, plenty of people to save the show here today. I'm in a very grumpy mood. I've been on our message board today and just reading a lot of stuff that is getting ready to set me off, but luckily, I have two pages of things to get into so I can distract myself with a bunch of news here today. Final Battle is tonight, as we're all well aware. We can talk about the card when Adam Cole comes on the air in about a half hour. Got a lot of WWE news, ticket sales. They've got a show coming up in Chicago at the Portage Theater, which seats about 1,500. Every ticket sold out in a minute. They're all gone. 1 minute, every single one of those tickets. It says there are 48 tickets left on StubHub. Cheapest ticket price at $145. And there's another show in Royal Oak, Michigan, just outside of Detroit, which sold out their pre-sale allotment on the first day as well. This is crazy.
Why so surprised by this?
Well, a lot of reasons. I mean, it's not crazy, I guess, in the sense that it's a 1,500-seat building. But you do know they've got this WrestleMania NXT show that's coming up in Dallas, which seats 7,000.
Mm-hmm.
And those are going to be gone if they're not already all gone. It's a pre-sale going on right now is what's happening. And those are going to go quick. I'm surprised because, I don't know, this is still a television show that isn't on television. It's on the WWE Network. That's all they have is television on the WWE Network. And all of the talk about, you know, TNA going to Pop TV. I mean, the universe, let's just talk about Destination America. I realize they only got about 400,000 viewers on average for Destination America, but it was available in like 45 million homes. And Pop TV is going to be available in, how many homes would that be? 65 million, something like that. And think about when they were on Spike TV, and they were available in close to 100 million homes. And they had 1.5 million viewers that were watching the show. There's way more viewers than are watching NXT every single week. But I guess really the key here is whatever they're doing in NXT, they're doing a great job converting whatever viewers they have into rabid fans, purchasers of tickets and merchandise, and it's impressive. It's very impressive to me. There's no way they should be doing this kind of business with a show that's probably viewed by less than 500,000 fans every single week.
If they weren't backed by WWE, you think they would? You know, even if this was the place to be, and it was, let's just call it PWG, you know, let's just say that the shoe was on the other foot and they'd somehow with PWG was in this position with this kind of outlet, with this kind of capability to be seen by who NXT is seen by. If it wasn't for WWE, with the hype around it and making it the place to be, it wouldn't be.
Yeah, but you just mentioned it. I mean, PWG, they will sell out all of their tickets in 30 seconds, too. So I can't even say it's all WWE. I mean, it's just a great show. They know what they're doing.
Hey, it's amazing what happens if you actually give people, you know, what they're looking for and you're able to manipulate them. And I mean that in the most positive of ways, like you did this past week. And I won't get into it again or anything like that, but that was a great show because not only was it good from the aspect of the wrestling that was inside the ring and giving people that paid for those tickets over there in the UK, not only giving them their money's worth, but it gave the viewer at home, I mean, the teases that were done, there were some things that weren't great about it, but there was some other stuff that was fantastic about it. You went on about the whole Asuka, Emma, Dana Brooke situation. That was fantastic. The way that Asuka and Nia Jax was teased where they never said anything. They didn't have to say anything. Maybe people believe that Nia Jax was going to get the win because you got her facing off with Asuka. Maybe you got people who are just happy that they're aiming at something for later. I mean, and without saying anything, your mind started to run wild with all these positive things that you could have going forward, unlike many weeks when it comes to WWE programming where you're wondering how any of this makes any sense or being upset with what you've been given and not understanding any of it at all and throwing your hands up at it. NXT's given it to you, and they've done a great job with that. So I'm not surprised at all. I'm happy that they are basically splitting, you know, making it more official now that developmental will be split into two pieces. It'll be, you know, the Triple H vanity portion of the proceedings, which will tour around, and then you're going to have actual developmental. And I think that's a big step. Well, they obviously are already selling merchandise. That's important to them. So as this thing starts to continue to grow and continue to get legs, we'll have to see what happens here, but it's amazing how loyal people will be and how excited they'll be when you'll give them something that they want and you make them feel as though they're getting something that they want and you're keeping them at their money's worth, and NXT is most certainly doing that.
So TNA, going back to TNA, they are moving to Pop TV on Tuesday. It's coming Tuesday. They were going to start in the new year, but Destination America has pretty much pulled the plug. And so they moved to Pop TV, and you think they're going to run a 1,500-seat building and sell out in a minute? The fact that they're not going to, I don't even know why I'm bothering.
They moved it up, man, to what we're going to know 2 weeks earlier than we would with this tape-delayed live broadcast from Bethlehem. I mean, that, to me, that's putting more pressure on them than they probably need, because we've heard about them trying to scramble for people and having names out there, Bill Goldberg being one of the names out there. And look, these tapings did not go great the last time that they were there as far as attendance goes, as far as fan heat or any of that sort of stuff. So, you know, Pop is saying all the right things right now as far as this being a big deal on their network, but TNA is going to have to, they've got their stuff set ahead of them as far as making this thing look good and feel good, and we're going to find out here coming up on Tuesday on Pop.
Listen, no one's going to listen to me. I don't care. I'm just going to say this. Now is TNA's chance to try to turn it around again for the 15th time in the last 15 years or whatever it's been. It's 2015, and if you look at who's doing good business and who is not, WWE is an outlier because they're so far above and beyond that even when things are terrible, they're still going to make money. So, I mean, honestly, you should throw them out of the equation. NXT, I mean, you can kind of throw them out of the equation because they are a subsidiary of WWE or a subsidiary. But, I mean, they still have a budget. I mean, they still have to try to make money, unlike WWE. It's not like they've got an unlimited cash flow. So you look at Ring of Honor, and you look at NXT, and you look at PWG, all totally different. Ring of Honor has national television, and they have a steep budget. They have a very strict budget. NXT has a little bit of a looser budget, but they don't have national TV. They have TV on the network. And PWG, they don't have TV. They don't have anything. They don't have video on demand. They sell DVDs still. But those three smaller companies are all doing great business. And the one thing that they all have in common is it is not skits. It is not a dude throwing a girl off a ledge onto a railroad track.
Well, there's some throwing of girls in PWG, I guess.
In the ring!
That's true.
And I'm not saying that TNA should go to all wrestling, because if they did, it would be boring. But they need to look at why PWG is successful, why NXT is successful, why Ring of Honor is having the most success that they've ever had. What are these companies doing that they're not? I mean, they've tried so many wacky things in the last year. Like, let's put the announcers backstage where, you know, like in someone's, I mean, it looked worse in the studio that I'm in right now, which is in a bedroom in my house. I mean, they put the announcers there on national television. They didn't even pretend that they were in the building. Like, how is that supposed to help? It didn't do a bit of good, but it made the show seem like something that you could miss because, you know, they just filmed some matches and then threw the announcers in the garage and had them talk about it. I mean, that did not seem big time. And that's just a little thing, but wrestling can succeed in 2016, but you got to look at what's working and what's not. And what they've been doing for the last year is not working. Back in a moment, Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network. Back here on the show, Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike Sempervivi is joining us as always. And the doctor of Lucha himself, Stephen H. Sims, here on the line. Steve, what's going on?
Hey, it's early. It's early. I am just ready to go, but I didn't expect to have to do it on a very sad week for Lucha Libre.
That's right. The death of Lismark.
He had had heart problems dating back 15 to 20 years. In fact, there was at one point where he may have had a heart attack or at least a scare that looked or appeared to be to him like a heart attack back in about 1999. And for a while there, he was thought to have retired. And if you go back through old observers and stuff, we had basically presumed he was retired. However, he came back and worked. He was a very high flyer and a very energetic wrestler. So, you know, working was quite the stress on his body and stuff like that. But he lived 16 years after his first heart scare, and he certainly was a Hall of Famer.
Is it true? I had read on the Cubs fans site that all of the stories of him being a cliff diver may not have been true.
I have heard people tell me that it is absolutely true, and I've heard, but not heard, or I have been told over the years that they made that up as part of his entrance gimmick and stuff. If they did, they went to more extreme to make that part of his legend than anything I can recall CMLL doing in the 70s and 80s. They had film of him with the mask on, standing on tops of cliffs, or what appeared to be on tops of cliffs, and they interspersed them with dives, and they pushed and pushed and pushed that. I never spoke with him about it directly. I suppose it could be part of a gimmick, but it's something that was widely accepted as fact from the day I heard it in the 1970s to, or 1980s is when I heard it, to the day he died, and only after he died did somebody come forward, and I, to the best of my knowledge, it's only been one or two people that have come forward and said that they were had been under the impression that it was a legend. I'm still leaning to the fact it probably was correct. It probably was true, at least in part.
This week, Dave Meltzer mentioned Lismark, as well as, I believe, Atlantis, as being the as influential on him as far as being some of the greatest high flyers that he had ever seen up until that point. What made Lismark so special and just so such an enduring name.
Yeah, it was. If I can compare it to someone who everybody has seen from the 80s doing dives, he was almost a clone in grace and in style and in the types of dives he did as Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. The bulk of his dives, the dives that Lismark did were versions of planchas, cross body blocks, whether he would do them from the ring post outside the ring, whether he would do them by diving over the top rope, or whether he would dive them by jumping onto the top rope and then off, which at the time was he would be one of the very first people that would leap from the middle of the ropes to do their dives. But Mike, what he was extremely graceful. He gave the idea of being under total control and being very gracefully athletic during all of his dives, and yet he still managed to get across the point that he was impacting the other wrestler, and the other wrestler was in a fight with him.
It's just so weird. I still can't get over this cliff diver story.
Well, it is a good story. I mean, his son would be the one to say for sure one way or the other. If it is something that you are promoting within Mexico, it might not mean as much. But in the 1970s, as I'm working on an obituary, I'm into my second draft for this coming edition of Figure Four Weekly, which hopefully everyone will subscribe to. One of the things I note is that in the U.S., in Texas, where he actually got a lot of work in the 70s and early 80s, including working for world-class championship wrestling while the Von Erichs were there, he got a lot of publicity as that gimmick, as the cliff diving wrestler who came in, because during that time, I remembered, I lived through it, during Wild World of Sports with Jim McKay on it, who was the most distinguished or most well-respected sports host of his day, would show those tapes about twice a year, maybe once or twice a year.
From Acapulco.
Show people doing these giant dives and stuff like that. And it made sense for a promotion in the U.S., and I am led to believe that it made sense for promotion in Japan. In Mexico, of course, just the fact that he was doing, you know, high-flying moves was plenty enough to attract fans for his wrestling.
Remember that, like Acapulco cliff diving that they would show and things like that. But also, and this may be trivial, but will he be buried with the mask on because his one son, Lismark Jr., who people would remember from competing in WCW, he lost his mask. Would we possibly be seeing pictures from him, or will tradition stand? How will this work? As trivial as this may sound, how does this work with the mask?
During the service, he would have his mask on. During the vigil, where people, the old wrestlers and family members will stand by the coffin for a few minutes or a few hours, depending on how long they can stand and you know how close to family members they are and stuff like that. They would likely have him wear the mask because for a wrestler of his day and age, and a wrestler who was as big a star as he was, and I would rate him between 10 and 20 in the all-time hierarchy of Lucha Libre stars in Mexico, which is way up there. He would be the kind that would have protected the mask very, very carefully, and not having lost it, Mike, I think he would at least go through the service there. Whether or not they kept it on when they actually lowered a tomb in the ground or cremated him, I wouldn't know.
How is there any and sorry, Brian, and I'll shut up after this, but is there any, how does it work exactly as far as if somebody in the family wanted to, El Santo obviously did it famously before he passed away during the talk show, he revealed his face. But how does it work as far as people later on in the family revealing who this man was? Obviously, we know what his name is because of his son who lost the mask and all that sort of stuff. People can probably draw the lines, but is there an unwritten rule about family later on exposing who these men were and how they looked?
Well, the unwritten rule that I have been told is that nobody is allowed to do it except the wrestler himself. If the wrestler wishes to reveal his identity afterwards, and very few of them do, most of them will if they retire with the mask or go to the point like a Canek or Emil Mascaris where they work very sporadically with the mask, then no family member will go in and reveal who it is, even if it's a son who's in the business or whatever. when Lismark Jr. lost his match to Blue Panther, he specifically told Paco Alonso, and he would have, nobody doubts this story, that before he could agree to lose his mask for the program, he had to have his father's permission. If his father said no, he wasn't going to do it. And so that was something that's something along the lines of the honor of the mask stays with the originator, and even the sons don't reveal who they are until the father signs off on it. And I think that is a very standard unwritten rule to this day.
We got a little time left. I got to ask two questions. First off,
sure.
Did he really wrestle a year ago?
I don't have any record of that. If he did, I'm very surprised. He has basically been retired for 6 years.
Okay, because I thought I'd seen somewhere that
he might have wrestled, you know, once or twice in a Legends thing where you get in, you do for 30 seconds twice in a match, and that's it. But really, really, he's been retired for years.
And I'm very sad that I actually didn't look at the video because I just realized there was a video, but I have to ask about this. Chris Zellner writes here, during a match in an outdoor venue featuring Dr. Littell, Escandalo, and Nitro against Kamatachi, Shigeo Kimura, and Shiru, a random dog ran in the ring, which disrupted the match, and the guys continued working and even sold for the dog's offense. What the hell can you tell me about this? What offense was there by the dog?
No, I'm not going to. You're going to have to go watch it.
Dang it! We got people listening right now.
You're going to have to, everybody's going to have to go watch it. It's up there with selling for a doll in Japan.
Does the dog spear them? Is that the offense?
Well, you'll have to see. It's not raising his leg and peeing on them. That much I can tell.
Man, I just got to check that out. That's real wrestling, Steve.
That's lucha. That is lucha.
When something like that happens and you go with it, they sold for the dog. Any other big news before we wrap up the segment here, Steve? What else is going on?
Well, yeah, there is in Lucha Underground, but we in the Lucha hardcore fandom are emphasizing a no spoilers quarantine until it actually airs on TV. But we can say, yes, the biggest story of the year in Lucha Underground is not only that it came back for season two, but that Rey Mysterio Jr. joined them, which means he's not going to WWE due to the contract he signed for a while.
And that's not a spoiler, everybody, since they sent out that press release all over the world.
Yes, yes.
Very quickly before we go, I hear that Joey Ryan is now part of Lucha Underground, if I recall correctly. And I just wanted to...
One part of him is.
Yes. Did you know that YouPorn, and I'm making this up, YouPorn announces sponsorship of pro wrestler Joey Ryan in conjunction with launch of YouPorn Sports?
Yep, got to do research.
They hit.
You can't make this stuff up, Ryan.
No.
You can't make it up.
The gimmick where he suplexes men with his member is now officially the YouPorn Plex. Swear to God, I'm not making this up. We got to do a break, everybody. Steve, I want to thank you so much. Figure Four Weekly, everybody. Back in a moment with Adam Cole, right? Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network. Back here on Wrestling Observer Live, Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. The Ring of Honor Final Battle pay-per-view is taking place tonight on pay-per-view, a Friday night pay-per-view. All sorts of great matches. Jay Lethal versus AJ Styles for the ROH World Heavyweight title is the main event. Roderick Strong defending the television title against Bobby Fish. Tag Team Champions The Kingdom versus The War Machine. And Kyle O'Reilly will be facing our guest today. Adam Cole is here on the line. What's going on, Adam?
Not too much, man. Just getting ready for the biggest show of the year for Ring of Honor. It being in Philadelphia is pretty cool on top of that. So feeling good, feeling healthy, and ready to go.
Man, your breath smells great.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, let me tell you.
You just brushed your teeth,
battle,
didn't you?
I got to make sure I get at least, you know, a minimum of three tooth brushing sessions in, just to have that really white, nice smile. And, of course, the breath has to smell good, too.
That's right.
Everything about the man is fresh and clean, Brian, for God's sakes.
Adam, are you one of those guys who you have to have some mouthwash in your gear bag and you have to make sure that you gargle before the match? Because there are wrestlers that's part of their ritual.
Normally I brush my teeth before I go, but I've never been, believe it or not, a mouthwash for me actually kind of, I have really sensitive teeth. So I don't use too much mouthwash, but I make sure that I brush my teeth very well, and I'm prepared. You don't have to worry. My breath always smells very nice.
That's good to hear. I was looking through the greatest source of information on wrestlers, which, of course, as you're well aware, is Wikipedia. And
of course, it mentions...
You see, I read it, and if it seems like it's mostly true, then I presume it all has to be true.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And it says here, for example, Jenkins, which is your real last name. I hate to break kayfabe, but cites Shawn Michaels as his inspiration. Now, I'm pretty sure that's true, so therefore I believe the rest of this Wikipedia.
Right, of course, of course. Actually, as far as I'm concerned, the last time I looked through the Wikipedia page, it cited that I had a younger brother, which is true.
Yes.
It cited that my parents split when I was about 9 or 10, which is true.
Yes.
And it also cited the most random piece of information, that I enjoy scuba diving, which, though it's extremely random, it's very true also. So, yeah, the personal life stuff, unless there's some crazy new stuff on there, all of that's true.
Are you concerned that maybe there's a stalker out there that was aware that you enjoyed scuba diving and threw
that
in there?
To me, is bizarre. I guess because I've done a lot of interviews and talked openly about pretty many things, that the information about my parents splitting and things like that, of course, that knowledge will get out there. But it's pretty bizarre, and I guess flattering would be the word, that they've been able to get all this information and put it in one place. So it's pretty cool, I guess.
Well, I can tell you that there is a citation, and it takes you to the DragonGateUSA.tv roster, which apparently there may have noted that you were a fan of scuba diving. That might be where it came from. Yes. That was not what I was going to ask you about, though. It says here you took karate lessons as a child.
Yes, yes, that's true. Yeah, actually, I can thank my karate instructor for the reason that I got into pro wrestling in the first place.
I vaguely remember this, but tell the story.
All by mistake. Yeah, yeah. I tried out for football, and I didn't make the team because I signed up too late, and I was all upset and really bummed out. So instead, my mother said, well, why don't you take karate lessons? And I ended up taking karate, and I really liked it. It was just something that kept me active. And then I'll never forget, I got there early, and he was watching a taped Monday Night Raw from the night before, where it was Stone Cold and Kane putting Paul Bearer in a sewer. And he asked me if I ever watched wrestling before. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I watch it all the time, but I never watched it before. Long story short, he ended up letting me borrow a taped WrestleMania 15, which also happened to be in Philadelphia, where Final Battle is being held tonight. And the rest was history. I saw Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock, and I was like, okay, this is what I think I want to do at 9 years old.
Well, it probably made more sense to do that than get inspiration from being, you know, facing off against Butterbean, as he did on that show against Bart Gunn.
Right. It was that Bart Gunn knockout that made me go, you know what?
Boxing is not for
definitely
me.
That's really what I want to do.
I brought this up for a reason. There's a tie in here.
Okay.
So I don't know if you're aware of this, but Seth Petruzzelli, who was an MMA fighter, he is now working at the WWE Performance Center. He's teaching everybody stand-up, punching and kicking and everything like that. Because I guess their idea is, if you can learn to throw a real punch and a real kick, you will be able to throw a better worked punch and a worked kick. Now,
okay, it makes sense on paper.
It makes sense on paper. Yeah. But I bring it up because when I was a kid, I did Taekwondo and karate. And we did the deal where, you know, you throw all your punches and kicks, but you barely touch the guy. You make a little bit of contact, but you can't really hit him really hard because it's like kids karate or whatever.
Of course. Yeah.
And so when I went into wrestling, like, I could punch and kick and never touch anybody because I'd done this for so long. So I don't know if I would have, like, done full contact karate. I think I would have killed people when I went into pro wrestling.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, again, when I did karate, it was more like defensive karate, so there wasn't too much offense that was going on. It was a lot of, like, again, this was kids, and this was prevention stuff and everything like that. But I totally see, I see the points of both when it comes to learning how to make full contact. But again, too, it all depends on the age. Like, when you're a kid, you're just a sponge, and you can learn and take everything in, kind of. So, yeah, I see the pros and cons to both, for sure.
I mean, did the karate help you with your super kick?
I think it did, for sure. Like, I think, like, especially at that age, the last thing you want to do is stretch. at least for me as a kid, you know, stretching was boring and lame, but our karate instructor really made sure that we practiced that. The height in which we threw stuff was really important. It was great. It just, I mean, mainly at that age, it was more about showing respect to other people and having discipline and things like that. So,
sure.
Yeah, I think it was definitely a lot of benefits.
At any point in doing karate, were you able to bag a chick that looked like Elizabeth Shue did?
He was a kid, Mike. Come on.
So was Ralph Macchio.
Well, you're right. Actually, yeah. No, he wasn't. He was like an old man. He just looked like a kid.
Well.
At 9 years old, I was thinking way more about X-Pac and Road Dogg and Stone Cold Steve Austin than girls. I don't think, my first girlfriend was, I was a junior in high school. So I was until then, wrestling was my girlfriend, and in some cases still is. So that's kind of where I am.
Well, help your actual girlfriend, if there is one, isn't listening, because you're going to get it yeah. when you get home. Now, I'm sure we've talked about this a million times, so we have new listeners all the time. You're wrestling Kyle O'Reilly, and yes. you guys had a very legendary match in Ring of Honor, and I do recall, I believe I was there, this audience did not want this to be a legendary match.
No. Nope.
They hated this okay. match, and they hated you yeah. guys, and they were determined to hate the match until you got busted up.
Right, right.
And then, they were into it from that point, and it became a legendary match.
Yeah.
I mean, it sucked to get busted open in that sort of thing, but do you ever look back and just go, that accident, like, totally turned my career around?
All the time. I've had discussions with people before within wrestling, and I often wonder where I would be had me bleeding all over the place in New York not happened. Because, I mean, just the way that everything worked, and exactly like you said, there's no, you know, two ways about it. Those fans did not want to accept the match. They didn't want to accept us. They were not into it. And then the second that I got to show that, I guess, side of me and the visual of the blood, I mean, not because it wasn't only the blood, but it was the way the blood squirted out. Like, it was just the fact that it was in New York City, the fact that a lot of eyes were on the event. It greatly helped you know, where I wanted to go in my career. And I often think quite a bit, like, oh, man, where would I be and where would I have ended up? So to me, it's kind of like, again, I compare it on a much smaller scale to when Austin bled all over the place with Bret Hart. Like, that was kind of his, like, oh, wow, we love this guy.
But that was planned.
Right, exactly. Whereas this one was even cooler because they didn't care about me at all. And then they cared about me a lot because of a mistake. So. Yeah, it's pretty wild the way that things work out.
It's just funny because, I mean, we could talk about this for a full day, but
right.
It's 2016 almost, and you really, I mean, I know some people are not going to want to hear this because blood in wrestling in the right situation is awesome, but you really
totally
can't go out there and bleed all over each other, and you really, I mean, it seems, I don't know. You're slicing it yourself and cutting open your head, and you see these old wrestlers, mm-hmm. and it's like, God, look at this guy. Was this worth it? But
right. Well, man, I agree with you, though, so much. Like a well-placed and correctly done blood in pro wrestling just adds so much to the drama, because at the end of the day, we're just trying to create drama, and man, does it add to it. It certainly added to it for me you know, for that night.
I mean, look at, like, Monday. I mean, Roman Reigns in Philadelphia won the title, and
right.
he got over huge. And I don't know if anyone's really mentioned this or not, because everyone's fixated on Vince McMahon getting knocked out and everything, but he got busted open, and he was bleeding hard way everywhere. I mean,
yeah.
who knows if that hadn't happened, if the fans would have embraced him and got into the match as much as they did. And it was a complete accident. He threw a bad headbutt and got busted open.
Right, right, exactly. I think that combined with the fact that, you know, obviously the stuff with McMahon, the stuff that happened the night before, all of it was just like the stars were perfectly aligned, but definitely the hard way blood for sure, especially in a town like Philadelphia, definitely added to it.
And then you think about what they've done in the past, where can you imagine if he got busted open and they sent that geek out there to stop the match and put a Band-Aid on his head, how this would have died. Thank God they didn't do that. So
yeah,
what are you, what, I mean, I know we can't talk too much about what's going to happen here tonight, obviously, but I mean, should we be excited about this match above and beyond a normal Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly match? Are you guys prepared to really bring it?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think we, as far as a match with a lot at stake, as far as how this match is being presented, I think for sure this is the biggest Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly match, as far as the way that it's been prepared and the way that it's been advertised and the fact that it really is 5 years in the making. And the fact that back in 2012, the people that we were and the performers that we were are much different than who we are now. I think for the most part, everybody understands who Kyle is. Everybody understands who I am. And again, final battle is Ring of Honor's WrestleMania, and we're one of the more advertised bouts tonight. So I think very much so we realize we have a tough hill to climb, but it's a challenge that we look forward to, and I think we'll deliver.
They plug this match like crazy on television.
Yeah, yeah, quite a bit. With all the, I mean, really, the 4 weeks of story time with Adam Cole was all promotion for me and Kyle O'Reilly leading into final battle. You know, we've done countless interviews, like you said, even, you know, the television angles. A lot of this has been done to build that match. So, yeah, the hype is there. We don't have to worry about that. Now it's the process of following suit and making it happen.
You know, they had Mandy Leon. I watched the Sinclair version, and so they have an extra segment you don't see on what used to be Destination America, now Comet. I don't know if Comet's changed it, but there was a Mandy Leon segment every show, and she would just sort of talk about angles or whatever. And all of a sudden, 1 week, Adam Cole had taken over. And
right.
You were there every single week, and you got to plug your shirts, you got to plug your match. And it's kind of like, they must really like this guy, because I don't see anyone else getting this opportunity.
Oh, it was great. I loved it. You know, and the funny thing was, too, it was presented to me as almost like it was going to be a chore. And, you know, of course, for me, not only because I love my job so much, but I realized that I'm going to be getting all this TV time. I was like, please, can we do story time every week forever? You know, that'd be great. So, yeah, I was stoked. I was really happy I got to do that. It was fun for me, too, because it's a whole different ball game and a whole different perspective of how you approach something like that. Because, obviously, I wasn't just there to completely talk about myself. I had to talk about other matches and other things going on in Ring of Honor. So that was cool for me to think, you know, how do I want to approach this as Adam Cole while still holding true to who this character is and what he brings to the table, while at the same time talking about what else is going on. So that was a cool little challenge for me and something different to do.
Well, the biggest compliment that I can give you is that you know you're pretty good when I would rather watch your segment than Mandy Leon's.
Oh, thank you very much.
Stand by, everybody. Back in a moment. Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, our radio network. We're back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Ring of Honor is on pay-per-view tonight. Somebody on Twitter asked, it looks like most places it's $34.95, including on the ROH website. Check your cable provider. Some places maybe a little bit more, some places maybe a little bit less. I think I paid $24.95 last time. But our guest today, Adam Cole, will be facing Kyle O'Reilly. A match to the death tonight on the ROH pay-per-view. AJ Styles and Jay Lethal in the main event. And Adam, before we go, let's get some plugs in.
Sure, sure. Again, what you had just mentioned, you want to go to ROHWrestling.com if you're interested in checking out Final Battle. If you're a diehard Ring of Honor fan, this is the one to get. If you're thinking about checking Ring of Honor out for the first time, this is the one to get. Again, this is like Ring of Honor's WrestleMania, so it'll definitely deliver. It's going to be awesome. You'll really, really enjoy it. As far as me, you can follow me on Twitter, at Adam Cole Pro. I have a like page on Facebook, Adam Cole. Instagram, at Adam Cole Pro. And then website, you guessed it, AdamColePro.com, with t-shirts, scheduling, and all that stuff. So that's it.
The pay-per-view is tonight, everybody. Check it out. And Adam, I want to thank you so much for doing the show today. Today and every time you do the show. It's always a great time.
Of course. Yeah, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure to be on.
And, of course, good luck tonight. And that's it, everybody. We will be back, myself and Dave Meltzer, tonight to review the show. Mike and I will be back on Sunday with a brand new live show here. Every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern. Sundays, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you again next time. Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network.